Welcome back to One and Done, Raising an Only Child, Not a Lonely Child. Today, Kathy is back and she will be leading a discussion about the myths and facts around only children. There's a lot of misinformation out there, and I think that this conversation is going to put a lot of us at ease. I'm your co-host, Jamie, by the way, just jumping in to add one more thing that I thought of. Well, two things. The first thing is that us parents set the tone. If we own the fact that we have an only child and that is A-okay, that's the attitude that our child will have as well. Secondly, it occurred to me that for people like me who didn't grow up with siblings in the home, we don't know any better, and I've had a good life. And so those of you who have siblings may project that we're missing something and it's some kind of tragedy, but it's really not. And I do think we have the power to choose our attitude. As an only child myself, I believe that everything can be an opportunity. And personally, I choose to be grateful for life rather than wishing for what I don't have. I look at what I do have, and I think we can share that sort of attitude with our children. At the same time, we do recognize that for many, it is a process to accept and come to terms with our family size and being parents of an only child, and we acknowledge that. Wherever you're at in this process, I hope that this helps you, and we are here for you, and we support each other. Here we go.
The two that really resonated was being spoiled. This is so far from, you know, the typical only child behavior. I find that a lot of only children are actually, their parents tend to focus on not spoiling them. But again, it doesn't matter if you have siblings or not. I think kids can be spoiled, you know, either way. Mm-hmm. Jamie, how do you feel about that?
Well, so on the one hand, of course, I agree 100% with what you're saying. I think parenting makes a difference, and every child, including an only child, is going to have a different experience. On the other hand, these myths can run really deep, even though they're just BS. For example, the other day, we were at a play date with our quarantine bubble, and all of the other mothers there happened to have exactly two children about the same ages as each other. And my daughter was having a blast. And the mother who organizes these things is so social and so confident and so lovely. And just, you know what I mean? Like, she's like a fish to water when it comes to parenting her two young children. And somehow we were talking about our families, and guess what? She's an only child. And I don't know why I was surprised, but I think it just goes to sometimes we've absorbed these stereotypes just really due to lack of knowledge, lack of exposure. And if I, as an only child, could think that and be surprised, I think it goes to show that, you know, sometimes we have our biases, even though I'm very, very cool with who I am, and I love supporting our community. And I even said to her, wow, I never would have thought. And then I was like, no, why did I say that? Why? Like, people are always complimenting me on how, I guess, social I am, like, historically throughout my life, and they didn't even know I was an only child. And every person's different. We're not determined by our birth order or how many siblings we have. That's a myth. So I look forward to hearing more about your thoughts on the myth of, you know, being spoiled or having poor social skills, because it's just not true.
Correct. I know growing up as an only child, my parents worked really hard not to play into that stereotype of spoiling their child. I worked for, you know, the things that I had. Yes, I was given probably a little bit more than somebody who had siblings, just because my parents didn't have to divide those finances among multiple children. So we were able to travel a little bit more. You know, if I wanted a new pair of shoes, and, you know, maybe I already had a pair of shoes, my mom, you know, would kind of give into that a little bit. It wasn't an all the time thing. So I've carried over some of that with my child. You know, I feel that, you know, I don't just give in to my child's every whim. I do believe in hard work. My child does earn the things that he's given. Mm-hmm. And again, we can, you know, my child's in travel sports, travel baseball to be specific, and that is not a, you know, inexpensive sport to be involved in. It can cost thousands of dollars per season. If my child was not an only child, I know for a fact that we would not be participating in those things because it's expensive, and I wouldn't think it would be fair to put one child in something like that and not put both of them in. So I know a lot of parents of only children are, you know, especially with the young ones, are like, oh, how, you know, how do we avoid those issues? And, you know, I have some really good friends that are awesome parents of multiple children, and so I've taken some of those lessons and have applied them to my own parenting. Not all of them, but, you know, I listen a lot, I watch a lot, and see how their kids react and what works and what doesn't work for our family. So here are some of the tips that I came up with. One is don't give in to every indulgence. That also goes into, you know, when your child starts begging, that's something I don't tolerate for my own child. Jamie, do you, like, are you in that stage right now with your child?
Yeah, well, she's four, so you've been there. Probably a lot of our listeners have been there, of course. You know, the begging happens. But I don't, it's not that I'm stricter because she's an only child. It just goes back to what you were saying, just being an intentional parent. Like, we just want them to know that we don't always get what we want, and we can be empathetic about it and be like, you really wanted another pack of jelly beans. They're so yummy. I wish I could give you all of the jelly beans all of the time. But we get one pack. Well, that was so yummy. Well, what would you like to do now?
You know, I also, you know, setting boundaries for your child when it comes to that, and, you know, nipping those kind of behaviors in the bud, you know, you definitely have to be strong and sticking to your guns with, you know, avoiding that. I know some people, some parents, you know, their child's crying, especially when, I remember my son when he was younger, there were a few times, like, we were in a store and he'd start crying because I wouldn't give him what he wanted. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think I did it one time and I quickly regretted it. Was I was just like, all right, fine, you can just, we'll just go ahead and get it, just yeah. So we can get in and get out. And I realized, okay, this is going to be a pattern if I keep this up. So I just have to stay strong and stick to my guns. And not every parent is perfect. You're going to have those moments where you do give in, mm-hmm. and that's okay. I also, this is a great tip I learned from my girlfriend. She's got four kids, and they're well adjusted. Just watching her with her parenting, when you ask your child, for instance, you know, okay, let's clean up your room, and your child is like, no, I don't want to. Okay, you give your child the choice. You can clean it now, and we can enjoy the rest of the day. But if you clean it later, and say one of your friends comes over and watches you come out and play, you will not be able to go out. So giving them that choice, knowing what the consequences are, is huge. And it's worked really well for my son, who's now 11, because it gives them the sense of, okay, I'm getting to make my choice, but it's an informed choice. And you can apply that across the board, as you know, with other situations. Especially bad behavior. You know, my son has, not that he's a bad child, but there's been cases where, you know, he's made a poor choice, and, you know, to avoid making the same mistake, you give them that consequence of, okay, well, you did this behavior, so this is the consequence. You could be, you're going to be grounded for X amount of hours or a day, or having their favorite, you know, toy taken away for a period of time. Mm-hmm. And I think that really hits home for them and realize, okay, I can't do this behavior again because that's my favorite thing. Jamie, with your daughter, how are you able to manage, like, behaviors and stuff? Do you do those things?
Well, I mean, I love what you said, and I think that the fact that he's 11 and, you know, is well adjusted, I'm sure we all have our bad days, but, you know, really just speaks to the fact that you're doing something right. Like you said, we're all going to have days where we forget what our parenting philosophy is and just say, fine, have the thing, or blow our top, especially in quarantine. It can feel like such a pressure cooker. And especially, you know, with one child, sometimes it feels more intense. I'm trying to organize my thoughts here. So you asked about what I do. I'll just really quickly mention books that I've found helpful for what it's worth. The initial book that helped the most was called, have you ever heard of How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk?
Yes, I have. I've heard that was an amazing book. We were past that age when I heard about it, so sorry, my dog's with me.
Oh, no, it's cool. You know, we do dogs on here.
This is the joy of being live.
Right. This is real people. Two real moms in real life here with you. That's a great book in terms of getting on the same page so that your child feels heard and they feel empowered, and kind of like what you were saying earlier, giving choices and also reflecting feelings, which is a major thing that I think it's easy for parents to forget to empathize because we don't always see things from their perspective. So that, as good as that book was, lately I've been reading more of this book called Parenting with Love and Logic. Which, okay. Because I have struggled a bit with boundaries, and so that book is giving me more of the vocabulary to set the boundaries. Now, they do things like timeouts and stuff. I'm personally not doing that. So, you know, as with everything, us parents, we can pick and choose. We don't have to choose one parenting book and make that our Bible, right? We keep our critical thinking going, yeah.
You pick what's best for your family. I know I used 1-2-3 Magic for a long time, and I honestly did not think it was going to work, and it did. And every once in a while, I'll pull that trick out of my bag, and my son's like, oh, she's serious.
That is so amazing, because I read that book and I really didn't like it and I don't use it, but I've heard other people have a great experience with it, and it just goes to show every family, every child is different. Like, you just never, we don't know each other's children, you know, like we have to remember not to judge, and just if it works for someone else, then that's great.
Absolutely. The next item that I try to teach my child to avoid being spoiled is the idea of giving back. You know, even from a young age, I've taught him about charity and volunteerism, especially in the community. I am a public health nurse, and I do work with a lot of clients that are, you know, destitute. They don't have places to live, also that are, you know, have addiction issues. So I see a lot, and there's so much out there in our community. And I like to, you know, expose my son to certain things. So we have this one thing called PADS. It's, you know, churches set up homeless shelters, and they do bring food in, and people can stay there for the night. Some are only for men, some are for women and children. And I think that's huge to expose your children to, so that way they can feel grateful, and it also gives them a sense of purpose and giving back and letting them know how lucky they are. So each year, my son and I head up a, we just do it through Facebook, but, you know, we ask for donations of hats, gloves, and socks, and even coats if people have them, if they can be used, or, you know, people, you know, go to the dollar store and buy like $50 worth. And, each year we donate those to PADS because they are looking for those items, even blankets. And my son loves it. Like, he really enjoys giving back. And we've also worked at the PADS, serving food to the homeless as well. And he really enjoys it. And he thanks me every time for bringing him, to these places, because he's like, you know, I didn't realize people lived like that, and I feel really bad for them. And it makes him appreciate what he does have. Last year, instead of doing pads, I let him choose a charity of his own. So he wanted to get donations for shelter dogs. So we actually talked to Petco, and they had donated like $1,000 worth of food to Orphans of the Storm, which is, you know, a local shelter for animals. And he really enjoyed it. And again, you know, just seeing how much he enjoys it, seeing, you know, the that caring side of him. And have you taught your daughter, like, do you guys do charity work with your daughter?
We do, yeah. And thank you for sharing that. I love that you guys do that. And I think that's so important to remind them that of what we have, or just that people live differently, or that the world doesn't revolve, you know, around them. And that he thanked you. That's so powerful that a young boy would thank his mom for taking him to volunteer and give back. So that says a lot about him. We do as well. I kind of try to keep it more, a little more private, but there's so many opportunities that one can do, especially now in quarantine. Like, for example, as you were saying, even just your local food pantry, dropping off donations, it's, you know, with your mask on, and have the kid come out with you and drop off the bag. Like, there's so many things even in quarantine that one can do. If they're older children, maybe they can, you know, make phone calls, or you know, offer to, you know, pick up some groceries for a neighbor. So there's a lot of different creative opportunities to show that even in a time of crisis, we are part of a community, right? It's not all dog eat dog, even though it seems like it. And yes, as only children, our families may be small, or maybe not. Maybe you have a big extended family, but it shows that we're part of a human family, and it's just a wonderful lesson to pass on. And so I'm so glad that you said that.
Yeah, no, we really enjoy it. And, you know, we try to stay within our community. Sometimes it's not so easy, depending on what's going on. You know, some churches decide they don't want to participate that year or whatever. But yeah, it's definitely a good thing. And I think it really makes them a more well-rounded child. Another thing I like to not do, and this is going to sound kind of negative at first, but I don't know if you've ever heard the term bucket filling. I am definitely not a bucket filler. Not giving false praise. I'm a realist. I'm not mean to my child, but, you know, I will give praise where it is definitely deserved and warranted, but I also believe in, you know, I guess positive criticism, because I think it's important for kids to be able to not just see the positive, you know, not always hearing, oh, you're the greatest, you're the best at this. I think it gives us a false sense of, you know, pride, I guess.
Yeah, empty praise. Yeah, it's not so much that we're not filling their buckets. It's more like, if I understand you correctly, let our praise be genuine. Let's praise a specific strength, a strength of character. So it's not always about getting the gold star and doing whatever we want, but it's also, you know, I saw that you were kind to your cousin. You're working really hard on that art project. That's creative how you mix the red and the yellow that way. You know, you're really helping me washing this dish, just because, like you said, they can tell it's BS if you're just saying good job, and that doesn't do anything. It, if anything, then the child maybe isn't trusting themselves as much almost, because it's like, well, gosh, everything I do is good. I don't even know if I can trust what mom and dad are saying. It's meaningless, right? Because it's not specific.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And especially in sports. I mean, we are a sports family, you know, whether it's basketball, football, baseball, and, you know, currently right now we're in the baseball season, and we've been fortunate enough to still have somewhat of a season, but, you know, I'm not going to sit there and say, oh my God, your pitching was the best. You're the best pitcher on the team, because it's not true. You know, every child you know, they're children. They're not perfect. They're not pro athletes. There's always room for improvement. There's always somebody that's going to be slightly better than them. And that's okay. It's okay to make mistakes and not be perfect or not be a pro athlete. You know, so we try to, again, praise where it's definitely warranted, you know, making good grades. You know, if maybe my son got a B on a test, okay, that's not a bad grade, but let's see where we can improve and work together to see how you can bring that grade up. Just those kind of things. Trying to think what else. Those are the three main points to try to help your child not be spoiled. Another huge myth that I wanted to touch on was poor social skills. And to be honest, I find, you know, overall, in my opinion, is that only children, I feel, actually have better social skills. I think we hold only children to a higher standard, sometimes too high. And I think that, you know, people who are not aware of the dynamic, you know, okay, I lost my train of thought.
but you know what, ladies and gentlemen, that's what we were just saying, is we're real moms figuring it out in live time, and we're right there, you know, in the trenches with you. But if I understand what you're saying correctly, you know, there are actually opportunities to grow socially as an only child. You can jump in and let me know if this ties in at all with what you were going to say, but when I was talking with you last time and you were interviewing me about being an only child, I was thinking, wow, a lot of what I learned in terms of being adaptable and fitting in different social situations and reading a room and having the confidence to go up to people. I understand not everyone is going to be as extroverted naturally, and that's okay. But in terms of, you know, you don't have the luxury of being insular all the time as an only child. And it gives you the gift of, instead of being so clannish, you know, I just stick with my brothers and sisters and my mom or dad or whoever all the time, and I have my posse. No, it gives you a preview of real life, where in real life, you have your support system, but you also need to find the strength and courage within yourself to branch out and make connections and grow and get to know different people. And so sometimes being an only child can actually be a gift in that way. A lot of times that is overlooked. Yeah. Does that tie in with what you were thinking, or what would you add?
Totally. Mm-hmm. Thank you for clearing that up.
Oh, I really believe it.
And I lost it.
Happens to me all the time.
Me personally, I was very introverted when I was a kid. I mean, my parents literally had to push me out the door and lock it behind me just to get me to go out and play with other kids. My child is very into being outside, and sometimes I'm like, Dalton, it's time to come in. It's time to come in. You know, spend some time with your parents. And I love that he is very outdoorsy. He likes riding his bike, sports. We have a playground right behind our house, so he spends a lot of time there. You know, I know when he was younger, I was very worried about, you know, I don't want him being so shy like I was. So some of the things that I helped to, or had done to help, you know, avoid that, you know, having the poor social skills, was, you know, making sure that he had play dates with peers of his, you know, with his peers. I didn't want him just to rely on myself or my husband to be his playmate. And that was a huge help. I even introduced him to like younger children, just so he had that sense of, okay, I'm older and I can kind of guide a younger child. We have a few younger kids in our cul-de-sac, and he's like really excited that he's at an age where he can take this babysitting course. And he plans on doing that so he can start babysitting.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Yeah, I think that's really huge for him. I do get a little nervous when he does hang out with too old of children. I know kids his age are kind of not, they're not in abundance in our neighborhood, but there are a lot of older kids, maybe, you know, just going into high school. I try to limit that as much as possible because I don't want them to grow up too fast, which goes into my age-appropriate materials, and I will give you an epic parenting fail. When my child was in second grade, I want to say maybe even first grade, he was homesick one day, and I just had so much to get done, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to let you lay on the couch and pick a movie. And he picked this movie that was, you know, that you had to rent from on demand. And I watched the little, it was a cartoon, so I watched the little preview, and I'm like, oh, this looks cute. It's about food, and, you know, I guess they're trying not to get eaten. And the title of the movie was Sausage Party.
I see where this is going.
My child ended up watching the whole thing until I heard towards the end, I'm like, that doesn't sound like an like, what is he watching? And I walk in, and there's some very inappropriate things going on. So I stopped it immediately, and, you know, he was laughing up the storm, so I assumed that it was just a really funny, you know, about cartoon food. And we still joke about it. I had to teach him, I guess there's a character in there that is a feminine product, and I told him that it was grape juice, and that was the container. So that way he would go to school asking for it, but apparently he did go to school asking for a douche.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe this is hilarious. This is hilarious. No, thank you. You're going to make a lot of people smile because this is so funny, you know, because we all have fails like that, but this is just, I almost wouldn't believe it. It's like something from a comedy stand-up routine, but I'm glad you guys can laugh about it because it's been a while. I mean, he's 11 now, and it'll just be something to laugh about, right?
Yeah, so ever since then, I've made sure to kind of pre-screen everything. Never trust a little preview that they give you, because the preview had nothing in there about these things. So you make mistakes. So I definitely look at age appropriate materials, friends. Another thing that I like to teach my child is manners. As you've touched on before, it's, you know, the not knowing how to talk to adults. I see a lot of teenagers, like, they could be sitting in a room together and they're talking, but there's nobody saying anything. They're talking through text. And I've tried to talk to some of these kids, and it's like they can't look you in the eye. They're very awkward. I mean, being a child is awkward as it is, but, you know, with this technology, like, I really dragged it home to my son that it's important to be able to hold a conversation, not just with your peers, but with an adult. We've done fundraisers where I make him go door to door, you know, and I'll be with him, of course, but I think it's important for them to learn those skills. I also, you know, try to teach him about being an active listener. He's got ADD, so like that impulse control sometimes, like especially when he was younger, was always to interrupt when I was in a conversation or in the middle of something. You know, usually the kids are quiet when you're on the phone and when you're, you know, doing stuff around the house, and the minute you get on the phone, it's like, mom, I'm sure you can attest to that, right, Jamie?
Oh yeah, always when you have something to do. I guess it's not gonna go away, huh? Oh well, that's how kids are.
I've worked really hard at teaching my child how to actively listen. So one of the tricks that I learned from, I'm trying to remember what book it was, I'll have to look it up and bring it back to another episode, but somebody had mentioned that if your child needs to get your attention and you're in a conversation with somebody or on the phone or, you know, in the middle of something that you can't really, you know, give your attention to that child right at that moment, they can place their hand on your hand so that way you know that they need your attention. You acknowledge it with just, you know, like a head nod or whatever, and that means that you'll be with them when you are finished with that conversation. If it's an emergency, you can do like two hand taps. Have you done anything like that, Jamie?
I just asked her to say excuse me, but I'm just gleaning ideas from you actually as we speak, which is part of why it's so important for parents to really speak to each other in real life. So maybe we'll try the hand over hand thing because we're still trying, you know, different things. But she will say excuse me, but it goes excuse me, you know, it escalates really quickly,
right?
So the hand over hand can sort of delay the audio component of that, so like I can kind of look at her and be like, I see you, but yet continue the conversation, and she knows that, you know, she's next in the queue.
Yeah, that was a big one for us, because, you know, my son would say excuse me or would sit there and be like, I mean, it was a huge thing for us, and he actually liked it. We're very verbal in our family with, you know, things that are going on, and, you know, about, okay, how does this make you feel? So, you know, we're open, and he liked it. He, you know, voiced that. I also, one of the things that we're dealing with right now, since my son is 11, he thinks everybody's his friend just because they talk to him. And I'm trying to teach him social cues and, like, body language, so that way he's aware, like, you know, if his presence isn't well-received or, you know, if somebody's not treating him right, like he thinks that they're their friend, but they're really not. Like, I'm trying to teach him those social cues.
Yeah, that can be hard to do.
Yes, because even as an only child, I will say that is a bit of a pitfall because, you know, you do not have siblings to help you with that. And not that, you know, that's always the case, but, you know, that's kind of been a struggle. But he's learning, he's realizing, you know, that everybody's his friend, and, you know, what behaviors are acceptable of friends and not acceptable. So it's a work in progress. Is there any other things that you can think of, Jamie?
Well, so for what it's worth with that, so we kind of take our cue from Mr. Rogers, who I adore, and, you know, he always called people, right? Who doesn't love him, right? But he always called people neighbors, so we just call everyone a neighbor. And if we have an actual consistent relationship with someone where we see them semi-regularly, like at least once a month, or we call them and FaceTime, and they're not going away, it's not just someone we saw on the playground or post-quarantine, you know, someone we sort of social distance played with once or twice. It's not a one-off, you know, it's not a stranger.
Yeah.
We reserve the word friend for those more consistent relationships, and the reason I did that was I just want her to know kind of what you're teaching your son, that friendship is sustained and built over time through shared experiences. And as I shared, you know, when I was telling you my story, I was lucky. I grew up in a small walkable town where I just could just run around, and I grew up with the same people in the same school system for like 18 years. And, you know, what I'm trying to say is that a friend is someone that you have a history with, you know? And so, but that's something that he'll learn. That's something that you and I learned. So I don't want listeners to think, oh no, now they won't learn. And, you know, it's not that. It's just, we have to be maybe a little more mindful about framing, you know, friendship versus, say, neighbors. At least that's how we do it. My child's still pretty young. So yeah, it's working pretty well, because she knows, like, you know, the friends she used to see at school who are still in our quarantine bubble, those are her friends, you know, and the family that babysat for her, who we still share time with as much as we can, those are friends. And We look forward to making new friends that God sends into our life. At least that's the way we look at it. You never know when your neighbor could become a friend. But in the meantime, we got a whole lot of neighbors on earth. So it's more, right. It's more like for example, when you guys go, what was it called? The PED, the place where y'all volunteer.
Oh,
PAD. You know, you're there with your neighbors, unless of course you have like a bestie or a close friend from there. But you know, we just kind of call everyone neighbors. So I wanted to mention that. And then of course, with my brain, I always circle back because other things pop up. And just, I wanted to ask you your thoughts on chores, because, you know, we're talking about the myth of only children being spoiled. Like, what thoughts would you have about chores? Because my daughter is just old enough to start having some basic responsibilities. And I didn't really grow up with chores. I think chores within reason in an age appropriate way are really, really great tools and teach you good skills. But what are your thoughts on chores?
Well, that's a good question. It's funny, my husband and I kind of differ in that area, but he's actually come to my side, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. So I grew up, again, only child too. I did chores around the house even at an early age. Like, I remember being in kindergarten and one of my jobs was dusting the furniture. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my mom was very strict about it. I didn't, you know, I spent spring breaks doing yard work with my parents and, you know, not so fun. Mm-hmm. However, I can look back and appreciate the skills that my parents taught me.
Mm-hmm.
But going forward with my child, I didn't want him to feel that, you know, he was made to feel like, okay, this is all he's going to do. I'm just using him to help clean the house.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a great character builder, and I also think it's important skills. So, each year we add something new. Like, okay, my child is 11, and mm-hmm. so he knows how to do his own laundry. He's mm-hmm. not very good at folding, but that'll come in time. He knows how to dust. He is learning to clean his windows, like taking them down and like cleaning the inside and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We do not give allowance for chores. My personal opinion on that is that you live in a household, so that is your contribution.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's something that you want, that we can talk about it, maybe there's extra things that you can do. My child will mow the grass. He likes doing it. And, you know, if he's wanting something, he'll ask me, hey, if I mow the grass today, you know, would you mind taking me for ice cream? Or can, you know, I have a little extra money this week to, you know, spend. And I'm like, that's fine. We have a big yard, so any little bit helps. One of the other things is, you know, because of our crazy schedules, we're not exactly the most consistent. I mean, I clean every week, but like as far as having him do his chores, it's not as consistent as I would like. However, there are two rooms that he is responsible for. One is his bathroom, and yes, he does scrub that toilet. Mm-hmm. And two is his bedroom. He's not the best at picking it up, and I'm not a stickler about, okay, there can't be anything on the floor or your bed has to be made every single day. I get it. We have a busy life. As long as, you know, if we have company, I definitely want you to make your bed and make sure your room is really picked up. He'll go through and dust and vacuum probably like 2 to 3 times a month. But, you know, I definitely ask him when it's time to do that. He just doesn't do it on his own. So,
No, but he's learning. He's kind of learning organically. Not to cut you off. Did you want to add anything else?
Just one other skill that he loves doing is cooking. On the weekends, if he doesn't have a baseball game or something, he'll ask, like, hey, is it okay if I cook breakfast for everybody? And I'm like, sure, not a problem. We do talk about what he's going to prepare, because sometimes it can get a little crazy. You know, you don't want pancakes and a cereal bowl with milk and honey. I've had that served to me before. But, you know, we're trying to teach them, like, basic life skills.
Sounds good. It sounds good. It's one of the many ways in which you and I complement each other as hosts, mm-hmm. is that we have, I think, complementary experiences. I mean, seems like you experienced one extreme with the chores. I was at the other end with almost no responsibilities, and I don't recommend that. So I think a middle ground is good, which it seems like is what you're shooting for, and we're trying to do the same. Now, again, she's only four, so one book that's helpful for me to figure out what's developmentally appropriate at what age is called How to Raise an Adult, Break Free of the Overparenting Trap. And I will put, I will list all of the books and things mentioned on the show in the show notes. What I like about that book is it has a chart of chores which are appropriate for what age, for a quote-unquote typically developing child. I'm sure we'll do episodes for parents of special needs only children. In terms of typically, I don't know if I agree with that term, but, you know, kids at more or less at like my daughter's age would be, you know, learning to help a little with the laundry, which, you know, she's done once or twice. I keep forgetting to sort of institute a routine. Make her bed, we're working on. I'm very messy, so I'm like, well, shoot, now I have to remember to make our bed. I mean, because I'm kind of learning along. It's almost like I'm learning with her in a way. She's very good at bussing her plates after a meal. And we'll just kind of, right? That's a big help, actually. So we're just going to build off of that. But I do think as only children, it can be so easy to... yeah, we don't want to fall into spoiling them, but we also don't want to be reactive and catastrophize it and think, oh, they're only children. They have to have all of the chores and all of the play dates. Like, that's not true either. You know, we don't want to create unnecessary stress. Like, only children are usually fine. That's the underlying thesis. We want this to be reassuring, but at the same time, we hope some of the thoughts we've put out here are helpful. And I appreciate you breaking down some of the myths, you know, and even though you and I are not perfect, there are many, many, many living adult-only children like us who are, you know, more or less responsible and well-adjusted. So not to worry, Mom and Dad, whoever's listening.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, we just do the best that we can do with what we have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not having, you know, out of all my friends, I was the first one to have a child. And so I often will look at other families and how they parent and take little tidbits and stuff. And honestly, that's the best way to do it. And I have read books and I'll take tips, but you do what works for your family.
Yes, absolutely. Every kid is different. Some kids need more structure. Some kids need more choice. I love what you were mentioning earlier about giving your son a choice and letting the natural consequences happen. Natural consequences are probably the best teacher. And the best thing is that as parents, we don't really have to do much because the natural consequences are going to happen, you know, come what may.
Okay. Yeah.
You know what I mean by that? Like we are... You know what I mean, right? Like, you give a choice. Like, for example, your example about the room, you know, and if he doesn't clean it, I guess he's not going to get the, what was it, going out with his friends?
If his friends come by and say, hey, let's go outside and play. Buddy, you've got to clean your room first. You should have done that this morning, you know, but you made that choice.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes I try to give even more leeway, you know, in terms of this has to be done by the end of the day if we're going to go out to dinner tonight. So choose your time. Yes. And just make it happen, Captain.
There's times where, you know, I do want things done, like, at that moment. You know, my husband and my son are notorious for making something in the kitchen and then, oh, I'm just going to put the dishes in the sink because Mom will put them in the dishwasher. And I've actually really, like, the last couple weeks, especially with me getting ready to go to work full time, I'm not going to have time to go behind everybody and clean up. And, you know, it's everybody's responsibility to clean up after themselves. So I've been really pushing that hard lately, because I don't want them to get into the habit of, oh, mom will do it or my wife will do it.
Especially raising a son. Yeah, not to cut you off, I just think, and not to be sexist either, but there are some parents that kind of forget to teach their son some of these skills and, you know, kind of without words, teach them by example that the woman in their life will simply pick up the slack for them in the home. And, you know, it kind of depends on how your household runs, but it's kind of not fair to a boy or a man to allow them, or anyone really, to enter adulthood without, like, basic self-care and responsibilities. And it's really not fair to their spouse. I mean, I know you know that, but it's something I remind myself, because, you know, sometimes our kids are cute and we just want to let them, you know, goof off all the time, and there's a time and a place for that too. But yeah, they have to earn their keep as well, which it sounds like, you know, your son does within reason. It's not super strict. It's just like he's learning what needs to be done, and that's just part of life.
And some of the things that I plan on doing, you know, this is where my husband and I were different, is he grew up in a very Italian family. The mom did everything for him, even into adulthood. Mm. And I, growing up, was taught how, like, by 16, I had a credit card. I knew how to balance a checkbook. I knew about investments. My parents really tried to raise a well-rounded child. My dad would try to teach me how to change oil in my car, because he's like, you know, you may not be able to afford to take it in all the time, so you need to learn these things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, with, boys, not just teaching them, like, how to build things, but also domesticating things. Girls, not just being domestic, but also knowing how to, A, change your oil or change a tire if you get a flat. I think those skills are super important.
I couldn't agree more. And this has to do with concrete skills, right? We're not pushing a particular bias in terms of ideology or culture. I know some cultures are going to have different gender roles. That's all good. Correct. It's just like, people, human beings, need to know certain things to take care of themselves in the world. Yes. That's the bottom line.
Yes. So, but to wrap up, again, avoiding those pitfalls of the only child, stereotypes of being spoiled, and poor social skills. I mean, Jamie and I turned out quite fine. Our children will turn out fine. These are just a few tips to help you avoid those things.
Yeah, thank you so much, Kathy. And again, we don't want to, I'm sorry if I keep repeating, but we don't want to go swing the pendulum and all of a sudden become overly strict with our only children either. You know, it's all about balance. Kids still need the time in. They need that one-on-one connection and the time just being. And it's all balanced, you know, with the responsibilities we mentioned. And it can be done. And we are here to support you as much as we can as well. So thank you, Kathy, so much for breaking down some of the myths for us today.
Thank you, Jamie, for helping me.
All right. And we'll see you all next time on One and Done.
Thank you.